What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Good morning, Mindy.
Good morning, Rachel Bilson, and welcome to the OC Bitches. I think everyone likes it when we really own it, right?
I mean, we should just, you know, pay tribute to Carmack and really do it every time.
This is how it's done. This is how it's done on the computer. How's it going? I'm really excited about today's episode, the telenovela.
Yes, it is episode 20 from the first season. What are we dealing with in this episode? Why don't you let us in on the synopsis?
Okay. Well, first of all, I just want you to know, well, we can talk about it. I've got so many things to say about this episode. It's got some of my favorite scenes and so many great Julie moments. So I get to talk about myself today because I was actually in the episode. So the synopsis is, can't we be friends? I don't know if that's ever possible, but Ryan and Marissa give it a try, but it's certainly awkward. Things take another turn when Ryan's former flame, Teresa Diaz, shows up in Newport, not New York, gosh, to work as a waitress for a special gathering and wants to try to reconcile with him. Meanwhile, Julie and Luke begin having a passionate affair behind everyone's backs, while Seth has to fight for Summer to publicly recognize their relationship. These are some pretty iconic moments. And well, there's something else I wanted to tell you before we actually get right into this episode with our guest.
Yeah.
So you know how I like to get on the treadmill in the morning because it wakes me up and it feels good. So I've been watching Heart of Dixie.
What?
Because when it came out, little Miss Rachel Bilson, I checked it out when I was doing my show Nikita in Toronto and I would watch it from time to time, but it's been a while. Do you ever watch any of the cast's other shows? Like, you know, Peter, it feels like Peter works constantly. So he's on Frankie and Grace and Zoe, what is it? Extraordinary Playlist. Mm-hmm. And I just watched Brody's, it's called Startup.
Oh.
Great show.
Is it good? No, you know, it's not because I would love to support everybody and watch their shows. I don't watch anything because of my daughter other than like I'll sneak The Bachelor or Bachelorette if I have time. Because let's be honest, if I have any time to watch TV, I want mindless stuff. And that's what I do.
Well, I just caught up on Making the Cut. Thus, I copied Heidi Klum's hair today. I got inspired.
Your hair looks so cute.
Oh, thanks. Thanks. A little bun on the top, you know, something easy. Have you been watching I know you like the fashion thing. Have you been watching any of those shows?
No. Do they still do Project Runway? I don't even know.
I know you've been a guest on that, haven't you?
I think I was a guest judge. Yeah. Yes. I was very many years ago. Right. That's super fun. I love all those shows.
In season 4, when we would shoot at the Roberts house,
yes,
you and me and well, I think we talked about this before and I repeat myself, but I remember that we would race in between scenes. We would watch Project Runway on that in the summer Roberts house.
Yeah, you did mention that and I believe it. I don't remember it, but I believe it because I did love that show.
Very good. It was super fun. Well, there's something, it's kind of a funny thing also. Episode 16 that we recorded with Nicole Chavez, our friend stylist, originally. And that's the links. So we're on episode 20. Originally, I think I got the message that we were going to record for fashion, the telenovela. So I had actually broken down this episode with fashion notes.
Oh, and there's a lot of fashion in this episode to talk about. Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Okay. So depending on what guest we have, we tend to focus on that actual aspect of the episode.
But yeah. I mean, there was a jeans under a dress situation, which was also apparently my first red carpet, which Mindy, we were at together. I had jeans under a dress.
Well, and Marissa does that in this episode.
She does.
And that was very much an early 2000s, the tunic tops over jeans.
Yeah, or any dress. I was a fan of like a slip dress over jeans. And I feel like you can do that again now. It's come back. I think a lot of fashion from the early aughts has come back. Some we don't welcome as much, you know, but yes, it's all kind of come back.
I'm actually kind of excited because I was doing some cleaning out of the closet and my daughter's really good at pulling out clothes and trying to sell them at Buffalo Exchange or Poshmark or those kinds of things. But I have come across a few things that actually wore on the OC. We've talked about this. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, we are going into a studio at some point soon. So I was thinking about the fashion aspect of like, what will we be wearing?
Right.
When you like, can actually see us a little bit more head to toe.
I'm always like from the waist down in sweatpants, everybody. So I only dress my top half and that's going to have to change. I don't know how I feel about that.
Well, well, well.
Well.
Hi. Nice to meet you.
Did you ever meet Melinda?
I don't know.
I don't think so. Well, rewatching the episode this morning, I don't think I worked with anybody, really.
was... Well, we're going to get into that. It's kind of frightening to rewatch all that stuff. It was so long ago.
Oh, my God. For real.
I know.
It's crazy.
It was a little bit emotional. Trip down memory lane. It's fucking crazy.
I bet.
Yeah, we've been having a lot of fun and we've had quite a few people on and some surprises to come that if I record, say, here... probably blow our load, so to speak. Okay. Anyways. All right, guys.
Speaking of blowing loads,
let me introduce our guest. Our guest today holds the coveted position of number 14 on Buddy TV's Sexiest Men of 2011. He then jumped to number 2 the very next year on that same list. His TV debut was on our very own The OC as Brad, the water polo player. He went on to play characters on shows such as The Young and the Restless, the Emmy-nominated miniseries Generation Kill, a little show near and dear to my heart, pun intended, Heart of Dixie, Netflix's Daredevil, most recently CBS's All Rise. He dabbles in tennis, cycling, writing raps for his co-stars, and most importantly, eating. Everyone, please welcome my own personal homie, who really is to die for, Wilson Bethel.
Hey. Wow, you managed to pack a lot into that intro.
I did. I was really proud. It was the first intro I've written for the podcast because Melinda always does them and she does an awesome job. But I took this one because I know you a little bit.
I was about to say it also because Melinda's like, who the fuck is this guy?
No, Mindy knows now.
He was on the OC for 14 seconds.
Well, okay. So we do some preparation here, but I checked out your show, Heart of Dixie, back in 2011. But then I realized that I hadn't kept up on it. So yesterday, I looked at, you know, YouTube puts together all of your cutest, romantic, funny scenes. You guys really bicker. Like Zoe's kind of feisty. And I guess that's the attraction.
Well, yeah, right? And rewatching.
But then this morning I started watching the OC, from the beginning
like
again on my treadmill.
That's Rachel's go-to with her male co-stars.
What?
That zone.
What, bickering?
Yeah, well, isn't that like you and Adam Brody's thing on the OC is like kind of that, right?
Yeah, banter, bicker, sure. Yeah. It's just me, really.
Nobody bickers better than you, man.
No one bickers better than Bilson. Bickering Bilson, apparently.
I think they definitely wrote to that talent of yours, that sharp-witted tongue, and we see a lot of that.
Yeah, listen, if I can be remembered for anything, bickering is definitely something I'm proud of. We are very happy to have you here with us, Wilson.
It's a pleasure to be here.
For your big debut on television, so let's get into it a little bit.
Yeah. Well, let's take us back to the beginning. This is your first acting gig, was the OC?
It sure was. I think I was 19. I had been in LA I'd only been there for like 6 months because I got here when I was 18. Yeah. I don't know if that timeline is exactly right, but, The story of how I got onto the OC was basically that like I arrived in LA not long before to play tennis, and one of the guys who I taught tennis lessons to was like a manager, and he like linked me up with an agent or whatever. Anyway, the agent had no reason to sign me, but I went in to wow him with like my spoken word poetry, which is how I got this agent.
What?
Yeah, I read a spoken word poem to an agent at Paradigm, and he signed me. But and then he didn't like, and then they didn't send me out because they were like, "This guy's a fucking tool. What are we going to send out this spoken word poem on?" But one of the first auditions that I actually got through this agent was for the OC, was for the pilot.
Oh,
and
who'd you audition for?
For Ben's role.
Ah.
And I ended up testing for Ben's role, which was also, yeah, this was like, it was like the craziest thing because also after that, I would not test for another role for like years. And so like, it was like this total fluke thing that happened.
Isn't testing fun?
And I have such vivid memories of that whole experience because at the time it was just like completely, this whole other universe to me. But going into Warner Brothers, and I remember Misha was there in the waiting room. They had like flown her out from New York or whatever. And then there was this other dude who had like more bracelets and necklaces and things that I could possibly count. Who was not Ben.
Who was it? Anyway, do you know who that was or no? The bracelet man?
I remember Googling him at one point years later. And maybe he was like just out of rehab or something. First bracelet addiction. Anyway, I remember them bringing out the contracts because when you guys know this, but like when you test for a pilot, they make you sign your contract of like what you would be getting paid before you go in an audition. And to like a 19-year-old kid who's never made more than like roughly minimum wage plus tips, like that was insane. I remember looking at like, you know, $18,000 or something, just being like, this is more money than I can even wrap my head around. Anyway, I signed the contract. I go in, I fuck it up, I don't get the part. And then I go back to my normal life of like, you know, waiting tables and doing catering jobs. And like, I guess it was probably, you know, whatever, 3 months later or something, the catering company that I worked for, they would send you out all over the place. And we had a gig at Warner Brothers. So I show up at Warner Brothers with my, you know, starched white shirt and my little black apron. And they take us down this hall, they pass me my plate of cocktail weenies or whatever. And I go into a screening room and it's they're screening the pilot of the OC. I remember passing a cocktail weenie to Josh Schwartz and being like, I hope he doesn't recognize me.
Oh my God. Are you serious?
Yeah, That's the soundbite for this whole entire episode.
I passed a cocktail weenie to Josh Schwartz.
That's it wasn't good. The first time and it won't be the last
time. It won't be the last. You are the passer of cocktail weenies.
Anyway.
Well, that's pretty crazy. I don't know if I ever knew, or I probably did know that, but I definitely didn't remember that.
You just, most of what I say to you is just in,
yep.
Now, you know.
Yep. Especially when it comes
a lot
from
of clear
you.
Passage.
Exactly. So I guess, yeah. So that was your audition and they obviously brought you back. Patrick Rush liked you and brought you back to play Brad, the water polo player, right? Did you have to audition for that or did they just ask you to do it?
I can't remember. I think that I auditioned for it, but like they felt bad for me. So that they basically gave it to me because they felt bad for me. And I didn't do anything.
Because of the cocktail
I only
weenie?
Say that because I know that I definitely didn't have any, there was nothing compelling about my performance as Brad, the water polo player that should have gotten me that job.
Well, was Brad supposed to do more than just this episode?
That was my understanding.
Let's unwrap that a little bit.
And which of course was like another like huge, that was a huge deal and huge break for me. And then I completely fucked that up. So my whole experience of the OC is kind of a comedy of errors. In fact, except for the episode that I'm in, which I watched this morning, I think all the way through for the first time, I've never watched the OC because it was too traumatic for me to go back and like rethink about how much I blew at that stage in my life. Because I ended up like losing my agent over the OC and the whole thing. Like it was a tough time for me.
The last I heard was that you have never watched The OC because it was too traumatic.
Yeah. I think I got fired because I think I was supposed to do like multiple episodes, and then they unceremoniously dismissed me after my one big break. And basically what happened is that we had shot for like a week, and then we had like one more day of shooting, but this was my first time on a set before. So I didn't know what like call sheets were. I didn't know how any of that worked. And an AD had been calling me every night before the next day of work, telling me what time I had to be there. And so I was just like, oh, the AD just lets me know when to show up, and I show up. And then we went into a weekend, and I didn't get a call from anybody on Sunday night. So I just figured, I guess I'm not working on Monday. And so I woke up Monday morning, and at the time I was living in this like basement, like converted basement somewhere in Atwater Village, and I didn't have any cell service. So I woke up in the morning, you know, leisurely at like 10 a.m., walked outside, and there was like, all of a sudden my phone just like blew up with messages. There was like 50 messages from the AD, like, where the fuck are you? And I had like a 6 a.m. call time in Malibu at Pepperdine or wherever. And at that point I was already like 4 hours late, and then still had to drive to Malibu. So by the time I finally got to set, I was like, I think like five or 5.5 hours late. And they had, you know, they rushed me through hair and makeup or whatever. I get up to set, and basically it was a formality to even bring me on set because they had already shot the scene that we were supposed to be doing that day, which was like a small scene. But in the meantime, they had given my role to an extra. And when I got onto the set, the producers all like stood up at Video Village and like gave a standing ovation to the extra, like while staring daggers at me. It was so, and then we didn't even shoot anything. Like they brought me up there to humiliate me, basically. Which I mean, fair enough. I kind of deserved it, but it was truly like one of the most. It was traumatic. It was like a super traumatic experience. And that scene is funny. Like I hadn't even seen that scene. And I watched that episode this morning. It's like they're out on the quad or wherever. And like, I forget who Brody's character is talking to, but like somebody like bumps it, like one of the water polo jock guys like bumps into him as they're walking by him. And they just gave it to like some random dude that was supposed to be me, I guess. But
you weren't anyway. There? You weren't there with the water polo people walking by?
No, I was sleeping. sleeping in a basement in Atwater Village. And then they ended up, you know, not bringing me back for any more episodes. And of course, my agent heard about it and they ended up dropping me. It was like a whole thing.
What?
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy. But, have you ever seen that t-shirt that says, relax, it's just a movie? You know, things happen, right? And it's like...
I have not seen that t-shirt, Mindy.
Yeah. Well, because filmmaking and TV making, it's like it's can be so important. And I mean, I've slept through alarms. I haven't been, you know, let go of a job, but yeah, I mean, it can definitely mess with the schedule, but clearly the same people rehired you for Heart of Dixie.
They just forgot.
It was 10 years later. I think they had forgotten.
For sure. I didn't remember. Wilson, I remember. I feel like, did you tell me that you were on the OC? And I was like, what?
Yeah, after the fact. I mean, I have, the funny thing is like, these days, so much of the work I've done since then just kind of like blends together and it's all kind of like a mishmash, you know. But like specifically that job, because it was the first job I had and like, I was so nervous and all these things. Like I remember everything, including after having gotten fired, running into you in like the ADR booth when we have to go back in and like poured. Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, you. No, Donald behind you. Anyway, running into you in the booth and being like, yeah, hey, I am so sorry about that. And you were like, yeah, yeah, no worries. And then we walked away.
You're saying I was an asshole?
I didn't think you were an asshole. I was just like, yeah, well, she's like a famous person and I'm like the guy serving cocktail weenies. So what the fuck?
Aw, Wilson. And then we wound up
and
together
look at us now.
Again.
But many previous years later. Previous to that, had you had a nice experience on the set?
No, I mean, no, only insofar as I was like shook with nerves. I was like, I remember being like, just as an example, I get really red in general. Like if I'm, you know, running or whatever, if I'm exerting myself or if I'm like nervous, I get red. And I remember being so red and so self-conscious about how red I was. Like, and hot, not just red, but hot. Like I was like hot, 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 red, red, red. And I remember being like deathly aware of it. And like being in my trailer beforehand, being like, how do I make the red go away? How do I make the red go away? Anyway, that was my experience of the OC. It was basically being like terrified and red and hot.
You had a lot of hair. That could have contributed to
it. I had a lot.
Quite a different look.
That hair was such a mistake, man. I was like, what was I thinking?
What do you mean? You know, it was perfect for that.
I didn't even know at that time of my life. You got to keep in mind, I had literally 6 months before I had returned from traveling in Africa for a year where I didn't cut my hair since then. Mm-hmm. And then I arrived in LA of all places and I had this just like mane, this like fucking Mustafa mane. And I didn't know that you're like supposed to do anything with your hair. Like here I am in LA, like, you know, guys are like getting, you know, look like Ben McKenzie's cut, man. That shit looked ill. He looked good. No wonder he got the part. Like my hair looked so busted and I didn't know that you were supposed to, style it or like put stuff in it. So I just had like this just block on my head.
Well, I think it worked for you and your character, I have to say. Mm. I was a little surprised though. I was like, whoa.
Questionable.
Were we nice to you? Like, did you feel welcome for your first job? How was that? Do you even remember?
I mean, I don't really remember. I mean,
just say yes.
I'm sure you guys were nice enough. What I remember was like, at that, you get like that show had like exploded, right? Like it was already like this total phenomenon at that time. By the time I came on at the end of the first season, like it was a phenomenon from when it first started airing. So by that time, it probably would have been like a total juggernaut. And you guys were probably like on the cover of Rolling Stone or some shit. Like, we weren't on the same planet. You guys might have been nice or whatever, but like you guys were all aliens. So it wasn't like a normal experience.
I love hearing this. But when you did Heart of Dixie, tell us about your, I mean, at that point, was that the next job for you? Or had you, no, you'd done Yelling
No,
the
there was
after
a lot
that.
Of years in between. A lot more, yeah. Lot more cocktail weenies, a lot more humiliations.
Really?
Yeah, that had... I mean, at that point I had been doing it, you know, been acting for, I guess, a little while. So I was, you know, a little more jaded and less red.
But, less red and less hair.
Yeah, I said, thank God.
You did.
But yeah, I think Rachel was slightly less alien at that point, although still mildly alien.
What? Really? What was that supposed to mean?
Well, I was just saying that before you guys were aliens because you guys inhabited this whole other world. You were slightly...
Got it.
At that point, I was like in orbit.
Mm. Okay.
I'm extending this analogy too far for sure.
Yeah. Rachel is fun to work with though, right? And does she giggle a lot though? Does she break up a lot? She's not a diva. Right.
She's definitely not a diva. And I definitely appreciate that. She did. I mean, to be fair, Rachel also terrorized me on on Heart of Dixie. And yeah. My experience of the pilot of Heart of Dixie, which although I was, you know, slightly more comfortable at this point, was still like, oh, yeah, like this is Rachel Bilson. She's like a famous person. And and this, she's also the lead of this show and I'm still basically sort of a nobody. And I had like three scenes in the show, one of which was making out with Rachel after we shot that scene and I didn't work for a few days, when I came back in like 4 days later, I walk into the makeup trailer and nobody's talking to me. I'm like, what the fuck? And Rachel's in the makeup chair and she like wheels around in the makeup chair and she's like, you gave me this. And she had a fucking herpes on her lip.
What?
And I just about crapped my pants. It was like, I was like, I didn't even stick around in the trailer. I think I had to leave because I was like, oh, I'm getting fired from another Rachel Bilson show. Like, first I show up 6 hours late, then I gave this motherfucker herpes. And of course I'm like, yeah, I probably have herpes.
Yeah, you didn't even question it.
If I'm being real, there's like a better than not chance that I have.
Wait, oh my gosh. But you know, but Mindy, the best part is Cindy Megans, who was our makeup artist on the OC, was the makeup artist on Heart of Dixie, the pilot. And she was the one who I was like, Cindy, you got to do that. And she gave me the fake herpes on my lip and fully.
Oh, it's fake. I thought it was real.
That was truly one of the meanest pranks played on me.
Mean? Yeah.
Well, I mean, it was a good prank.
It was a good prank. Let's just call it good.
When you're the victim of a prank, you're not like, oh, that was a good prank. I had fucking crap in my pants, so I had to go change.
Oh my gosh, I'm laughing at how awful that was. Now yeah. I don't know if it's as funny. No,
I mean, I can That's laugh a good about one, it now.
Rich. Yeah. Yeah, I think Cindy, you know, Cindy, she was all about it. It was pretty fun. That was the pilot. It was a nice little, like, you know, hazing introductory to what it was going to be like working together. Lots of fun times. Lots of breaking character for sure. We had a
really fun set all around, I would say. Mm-hmm. Maybe like a little too fun. I think I've often thought since then, especially like as, you know, people have kind of battened down the hatches a bit and gotten more careful in good ways about, you know, people feeling comfortable on sets. I was like, yeah, we said and did a lot of things on that set we probably shouldn't have. in terms of what's, you know, acceptable workplace behavior.
Are you saying that if Me Too existed then, we'd be in trouble?
I mean, not Me Too specifically.
Not you.
It wasn't like I don't think it was toxic per se, but it was like, it was definitely like, yeah, I could see if somebody came on that set with like a strict Catholic background, they would not feel comfortable.
Fair. I feel like that might also apply to our episode today for some reason. Does it? like my transition?
That was a weird segue. Yeah. Tell me how that adds up.
This is what I do.
Well, what was it like watching this episode as the official first episode that you've ever seen? Is that an honest statement?
It was obviously like, it was super awkward to see it myself. Like, I'm just like, oh my God, like, why did they even hire me in the first place? And why that hair and the whole thing? It was just odd. And it was just like, the performance was like eight words and they were all just spoken so terribly. Anyway, really,
I thought it was
awkward.
Quite good.
Yeah,
I'm going to give you props for your first job.
Come on, man. You guys
are
being terrible.
What do you mean? You seemed super comfortable and like natural and everything.
You had a good attitude.
Relax.
It was like an arrogant polo playing attitude.
I think you guys are being nice, but thank you. Anyway, but more than anything, I was struck by like how much it transported me back to that time. Because it was just like, that's such a time capsule era, you know, because that was what? Like, that was like 2003 or something like that?
It was 2004.
Was it?
2004.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, what a time, man. What a time.
Yeah, I mean, you said you were 19? That's crazy.
I was 19, yeah.
Young lad.
Well, it's 2004. Yeah, I guess it might have been 20 by that point. So,
all right, well, fine.
But yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was, I'm curious now. I actually, when I finished watching, I was like, oh, I should watch the pilot because I never watched the pilot.
It was too traumatizing.
Yeah. But I think I should. I think I should.
The pilot's good.
I bet.
I bet.
But no, it seems like, I mean, I remember that show being so huge at the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, for me to have that tiny little role, and I remember, like, all of my friends saw it, and they were like, are you on the OC? And I was like, yeah. Brad the water polo player.
Brad the water polo. Did you ever play water polo?
Not even a little bit. I'm a terrible swimmer.
It's not an East Coast high school thing. You're from the East Coast. Right?
I'm from the East Coast originally, yeah. I mean, I don't know, man. I think I just stayed away from pools for the most part. I just always felt like there was pee in there.
There definitely was, but doesn't stop people. This episode was fun, I think. I mean, it was definitely fun for you, Melinda.
Oh, when I opened this script, I remember actually yelling, I officially love this show because of some of the dialogue that they were writing for me.
Yeah.
And you can actually, I've got a little hop in my step during this episode and I remember some things pretty vividly.
Yeah. I mean, there's that shot of you in the hallway, like from shoes up, where mm-hmm. you're just like, oh shit.
She's glowing. She's getting a little you look something. Good. Something.
You look good. It's a really fun storyline with you and Luke, and it's really unfolding in this episode.
On Valentine's Day 1929, a group of gangsters was massacred in a cold Chicago garage. The crime shook the country, and even though investigators had only just started looking for answers, everyone was sure they already knew who was behind the crime. Al Capone. Hi, I'm Jeremy Schwartz, host of the new true crime history podcast, American Criminal. We take you inside the minds of some of our most notorious felons and outlaws, exploring the dark side to the American dream. In our latest season, a child of Italian immigrants sets out to make good on the promises of that dream. But Al Capone's path to success doesn't take him down the straight and narrow. Instead, he transforms himself from a smarter-than-your-average thug into the most infamous criminal America has ever known. Listen to American Criminal Al Capone wherever you get your podcasts. Or to get early ad-free access to the entire season first, plus hundreds of other ad-free history podcast episodes, subscribe at intohistory.com.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
It's time for another season of The Palmetto Porch, an original podcast from Discover South Carolina. I'm Devin Whitmire. Join me as I get to the heart of what makes South Carolina such a great place to visit by speaking to the locals who make it so special. Premiering December 5th, find The Palmetto Porch wherever you get your podcasts. And for more information about our show, visit scpalmettoporch.com.
Yes. But the episode starts with Ryan and Marissa trying to be friends. And that's that old When Harry Met Sally question. Can men and women really ever be friends, especially as teens? Mm-hmm. So they're kind of learning that I think men and women can be friends. What do you think, Wilson?
Oh, man, that seems dubious. The way they played video games together seemed awkward at best. That ninja game.
I don't know about you, but that's what I do with my guy friends. Like, let's play ninja video games.
They seem pretty awkward to me. They seem pretty awkward.
Right.
But then again, I didn't have any of like the backs. Like, I didn't see all the episodes that came before that to like know why I should be rooting for them. So I was just like, yeah, these guys don't seem like written in the stars.
Wait, who are you rooting for?
Oh, Ryan and Rosa.
You and Seth.
Yeah,
obviously. That's the power couple.
Right.
But the episode starts with some really interesting things where Seth is like, I've got it. We're over the hump of the awkward sex. But Summer is talking about how under the sheets, he's the anti-Cohen. And he's just such a geek. And I was like, okay, Rachel, do we like Summer right now? Do we like her in this episode? Because you haven't liked her in the past.
Right.
But then we find out that she's actually afraid and vulnerable and all that. But at first I was like, wow, she's being really awful to Seth.
Yeah, I mean, the ignoring your boyfriend and just like, you know, with the cool water polo player isn't exactly ideal and
let's put
shameful.
Cool in quotation marks.
Cool. It was your hair. The cool water polo player. I think, I think it's lame because, but she gives that whole speech to Seth where she's like, I just don't like public displays of affection and, you know, and obviously it's all bullshit, but yeah, I thought it was lame.
But that was such a great speech. And I think at the time, if I'm correct,
yes,
it's a reference to Bennifer, which is right back now, guys.
It's very ironic. Is it not? Bennifer is referenced, and yet 20 years later, they are back together. Wilson, how do you feel about the J-Lo Ben Affleck reconciliation?
I thought you, in that episode, I thought you guys were talking about Brad and the other Jennifer.
Wait, did I say it wrong? Oh, I just said Brent Bennifer, didn't I? No,
yeah,
Ben and Jennifer.
Yeah,
that's
J-Lo,
right.
No, but that's
J-Lo,
what I'm saying. I thought
Ben Affleck. J-Lo and Ben Affleck.
I didn't understand that.
Because I say, oh, and your movie bombed because Geely or whatever, where they met, so it's Bennifer.
Yeah,
as in Ben Affleck and J-Lo.
I thought it was a Brad Pitt and Jennifer Aniston reference, not the
could have been,
but it was not.
I think.
So that being said, are you excited J-Lo and Ben Affleck are back together?
I mean, I literally wake up every morning and my first thing is "Dear Diary." I'm so happy they're back together. I think I could safely say I couldn't care less.
Right.
Well, I for one am happy for them.
Oh well, that's good. I'm happy for them too. I think everybody should find somebody.
Everybody should find somebody. Okay. Oh, I was also going to say, because, you know, the Bennifer thing, and then who says, like, is it Seth that's going, who puts Seth and Summer together? And they're like, Summereth and saying word. I'm like, do you know? Didn't that happen in this episode?
Oh,
someone
says
that.
No. Seth says that. He talks about it because he actually takes your argument and he is persuaded to accept your explanation of why you're ignoring him. And then he says it out loud and in the kitchen, doesn't he?
I don't know.
Oh,
but
gosh.
Yeah, I think so. But Wilson, your character on Heart of Dixie and mine were known as Zaid. Another, what's that word called when you put things together?
Shipping.
Oh, okay. That's not what I was going for, but yes. or maybe that is. Whatever. Yes. We also shared that. Another funny similarity. Anyways.
You're an ace at this, Rachel.
I am. You should listen to all our podcasts. Let me tell you.
Nobody makes a tenuous connection or an awkward segue like Rachel Bilson.
That is right.
You
that
said
right.
The word "the" in your last sentence. I'd like to use that as an opportunity to segue into another idea I have, which also shares the word "the."
Yes, that is a go-to of mine, and it works because you know what? It's everywhere. Moving right along.
Moving right along.
You know, booty call is mentioned a lot also in this episode, and I wanted to ask you guys, have you had experiences with booty calls? And if so, would you like to share? No?
Melinda?
Well, I'll tell you about my experience. It was on a show called The OC, and there was an actor named Alan Dale who showed up. And but seriously, I don't know if that was... I feel like that term was kind of new at that time. Could I be wrong? In 2000?
I think you're right, yeah.
And so when I read it, and I mean, to be honest... I'm learning about pop culture along with the show. So when I see, that was actually one of the best scenes because Alan Dale did not know what a booty call was either. And because he's actually Australian, and I say in the scene, I say, is this a booty call? And he's literally just genuinely say, what's a booty call? Because he says it with the T. Mm-hmm. And it was just such a gem. And then later when Julie actually calls Luke and says, show up, knock twice. And Luke, this is a booty call. Mm-hmm. That's when I screamed and said, I love this script because it was so much fun. It was really so much fun. But at the beginning of the episode, when you referenced the scene where it starts on Julie's feet mm-hmm. and goes up, mm-hmm. I remember that specifically because this is when I say, I actually like my feet and legs. Thanks, Mom, because she was a ballerina. And I just remember stepping into it and you can see that Julie's like, She is glowing. And also, here's a point that I want to make. I've said in the past that Julie had too much makeup on and that it comes down. And this is the first episode where it's a lot less makeup. And she just looks so young and glowing. And she's wearing Chanel. And Chris Carmack did such an amazing job at that awkward scene with Jimmy and Julie, where she's like, I can't do this anymore. And no, we just can't do it here.
In the hallway. You know,
so, yeah. And all of a sudden she's nice. Who knew that Julie just needed to get a little sex to be a nice woman?
Yeah.
Right?
You just needed to get laid. And all of a sudden you're nice and very agreeable with your ex-husband.
That's that scene in the episodes like this remind me of getting up in the morning and being so excited to go to work. It was literally just fun. It wasn't work.
Yeah. Wilson doesn't know about that, getting up in the morning and going to work. He misses his
call. I'd get up in the early afternoon and go to a place to get fired.
Also, there was another thing that I made a note of in this episode where Teresa is very openly hangry and she's being a bitch to Ryan because she's hungry. And I thought, you know what? That is very accurate. And I myself get hangry a lot of the time. Wanted to share that because that is very important information, everybody. I know everyone can relate.
Is that a segue to like a Domino's commercial? Or
it's a segue to nothing related to that.
Oh, wow.
Shocking, I know. I made a point that everybody is fucking at, not fucking, but yes, you are fucking at the Mermaid Inn. Are there no other inns in Newport Beach or Orange County?
It's the place for tour de fairs and people from out of town who are working as waitresses.
Apparently.
But that actually is a motel in Long Beach that exists.
I was struck by how far off the mark, I forget which character was trying to remember the name of the inn. It was like either Seth or...
It was Ryan.
It was Ryan's character. He's the sea monkey. The seashell or it's the short... I'm like, bro, you're not even close to mermaid. Like, why are you guessing the name of an inn that you clearly have no idea what it's called?
But I'd like to give some props to the art department for that actual mermaid and the sign, because that's not what that... I think it's called something like it's called the Beach Plaza Hotel in Long Beach. Yeah.
Look at you.
Yeah. Oh, and that reminds me because yes, going into that is one of the famous scenes, the Luke and Julie hook up and he says, you know, I don't want to be late for homeroom. And this is where standards and practices made us put in. Oh, right. Because you're high school, because you're 18.
I was going to ask you, that was definitely like an ADR or a line added after, right? For legal purposes?
I think they added it kind of, yeah, because they were very particular about that. Because all of a sudden you guys are 16 and all of a sudden Luke is 18, but they made them add that scene. But I do remember thinking, I watching this yesterday, actually, I was blushing watching it. I was like, oh, I have a 21-year-old daughter, Wilson, who's refused to watch the OC because of me making out with younger men. And she's kind of okay now with it, but...
Do you make out with a lot of younger men on that show?
Well, it was Chris.
And then she just makes out with a lot of men. You made out with Chris Pratt?
In the parallel universe and Sandy Cohen and your dad.
She got around. Julie Cooper got around.
Nice work.
Basically.
Yeah, see, I'm blushing now again.
The parallel universe. Okay, we'll get there. And I guess season 4, 3, whatever.
Yeah.
No idea.
Hey, I did want to say that when Ryan and Marissa have this awkward conversation about Teresa when they're having lunch, this was the most that I witnessed Marissa was like Misha. You know, for some reason, she was, instead of being the doe-eyed girlfriend, she was kind of like confident and
she added herself
a little
it.
Bit. Does that, it reminded me of Misha herself in
this
episode.
Well, she was being like playful with Ben a little bit, right?
Yeah.
In that scene or with Ryan or whatever.
Or just the whole time she was a bit more, she seemed to have a good attitude, like we'll be friends. And yeah, it felt more like Misha than Marissa. Just a little note that I saw.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And Anna comes back from Pittsburgh and she's calling Seth out and Summer out. And it's interesting that Summer like opens herself up to Anna. I thought that was interesting choice.
I gotta say, Anna was almost like this little guardian angel in this episode. For, I mean, like, could she be a better person to help you and or help Summer and Seth at the same time and put you guys together? And then ultimately it's painful for her. So she ends up, you know, leaving. We know that. Sorry if that's a spoiler.
She ends up leaving? When does she leave? Does she leave soon?
The next episode.
Oh. I haven't got there yet.
But can I mention, I was going to say, and I said this earlier, that I thought this was going to be an episode we were going to talk about fashion a few months ago, but there's a lot of fashion. And that was a very interesting vibe outfit that she had going on, that really cute purple top. Wilson, we talk about fashion here too.
Yeah.
And the blue tights and the gold shoes.
If you
shoes
didn't say anything about that purple top, I was gonna.
Really? But it's like, I feel like Samira put in her personal touches, or it just was like more of an East Coast funky vibe, more
less. There was a lot of layering, a lot of layering. But yeah, they always made Anna very quirky and, like, you know, she took risks. So shall we say. Wilson, what was your favorite outfit from this episode?
Yeah.
I mean, it must have been that one t-shirt that one character was wearing. I thought it was just accentuated everything in the right way.
Agreed.
You're talking about Summer's pink rainbow top during the kissing booth, right?
That's the one.
The kissing booth. You know, when the kissing booth comes up, at first I thought like Summer had a bunch of guys lined up and they didn't show any girls lined up on your side. But there were.
Yeah. There were hundreds. They literally they had to beat them away with sticks.
Calm down there, Willie.
That can't possibly be a real thing, right? Like, that's so fucked. Like,
a kissing
just
booth?
Like kisses for money at school?
You know what? It was in like Porky's, that movie Porky's.
Oh, wow.
Which was like the 50s.
Yeah.
I think kissing booths were more, it felt like 50s or 60s.
Yeah, you definitely couldn't get away with that now, I don't think. I think it would be like...
Well, COVID would be a problem.
Oh, right. There's that. But, you know, the little chestnut called COVID. I think that, and Summer's like, oh, I'm getting paid to make out with guys. Or Seth says it. Someone says it. And it's just like, that's kind of fucked up. But, you know, anything for the water polo team, because you need money for some reason.
Poor water polo players at Newport Beach High School.
Swim caps, yeah. I'm like, what is the point of this? The point is so we can stand on top of the kissing booth and make a really good scene.
I would like to make a mention of when you are in Summer's room, Seth and Summer are making out and he brings up the ignoring and you have that speech. And my note was, could you be more adorable? Like, it just, this is when the audience just loves those Summer speeches.
You're going to make me blush now, Mindy.
Well, it was so cute. And it's like, but then Summer has a point. And then I have to ask, because this is definitely mirroring a relationship that you had with Brody as well. Were you guys kind of out? Was it public right now at this point? Do you know?
Yeah, you can ask. I just have no idea. I don't know when it was. I'd have to like look and see if there was anything where it was like, oh, Rachel and Adam are dating or whatever. I just said myself in the third person. That's my pet peeve. Sorry.
Do you remember what it was like to have that kind of scrutiny where people were kind of obsessed with you guys, but you've always handled it pretty well?
I don't know. I was so young. I don't think I even paid attention, to be honest. It was just like what it was. So I don't remember anything like, you know, other than it just was what it was and we were in it together and it made it easier. For sure. But yes.
It kind of, and the show having that, you know, that sense of humor that makes fun of what's going on in the real world.
Yeah. Josh was really good at that, writing in what was happening into the script. So yes.
Right.
I don't know. But we were definitely together at that point, like at this point of the show. I say that and I'm like, were we? No, we were. I'm going with yes.
Okay.
We'll have to ask. No, I mean, I'll look it up. Okay.
Okay.
So did anyone else find it super awkward when Marissa comes to the Coens and they're all having dinner and Teresa's there and they're like, oh, are you hungry? And she's like, starving. Do you mind? Did anyone else find that like incredibly weird?
Yeah. That's the she wasn't big on social graces, old Marissa.
Very odd.
That's the first time I thought that's the Julie Cooper in her.
Oh, okay.
She was like, you know, because
yeah.
Yeah, because Sandy says, you know, don't give up on Ryan. Jimmy says, you've got to let him know what you need. And just shows up and goes, you know what? I'm not going to lose you. I'm going to show up and let it be known.
Yeah.
There was another in that scene as well, right before Marissa comes, we should mention that, of course, I think a lot of people know this, but the mention of Sandy doing musicals, mm-hmm. Peter Gallagher was Danny on Broadway.
Right.
So that's another
from
meta
Greece.
Humor that... Yeah, from Greece. And in fact, he's done did thousands of performances
Broadway
as
shows.
Danny.
Yeah, he did. And well, Wilson, you did. Well, it was off Broadway, right? It was off Broadway, but you did a play a couple years ago or a few years ago?
Yeah, I sure did.
Look at you dabbling there as well.
You're a true thespian.
He is an artiste.
Something like that.
Well, you know, I have to get to the kissing booth scene because I feel like it's one of the more recognized scenes from the show.
It's iconic.
Well, as we get to the scene, this song starts playing, right? It's Something Pretty by Patrick Park, I believe. And I'm listening because I'm watching it yesterday and I'm like, God, this song is so familiar. And then I realized, so Josh Schwartz in his wedding, all of us bridesmaids, I was maid of honor at his wedding, walked down the aisle to that song. So I text Josh. I was like, dude, this song is in the OC. He's like, yes, Bilson. Like, you idiot. I was like, oh. But anyway, it just triggered that for me. And then I remember Josh being really mad at his wedding because it had to keep playing on repeat because there were so many of us. And he was so mad that he didn't pick another song to transition to. And it just kept playing over.
Oh my God.
And over.
For a guy who created like endless epic playlists for millennials at that time to not have more than one song picked, it's a catastrophe.
Yes. No, he still to this day is not over it. So that was a funny little thing. Then I was watching the scene.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
Yes.
But the scene is so cute. I hadn't watched it. Maybe I watched it back then, but I definitely didn't remember it. And I just thought it was very sweet. And yes, once again, I teared up. I tend to cry a lot while watching the show.
Oh, mm-hmm. That's sweet.
Yeah. And it was just really cute. And she
I thought, personally, as a viewer, I was much more touched by the scene where you were owning up to your own shit with the Anna character.
Really?
I thought that was a very touching scene.
Well, gee whiz.
Absolutely.
Thanks.
We talked about in a previous episode when she first showed some of her vulnerability to Seth and what I said before of her being, you know, I wasn't on board with what she was saying and I thought she was being very rude to Seth. And then this is where we start seeing this deeper, deeper layer. And it makes sense that she feels scared that she might lose him. I mean, all of these kids have this false bravado. I think most of us when we're teenagers have this false bravado. And ultimately, it's so cute when he comes running up and makes that stand. I have to make a point, though. He says, you say, I'll IM you later. And I was like, was text not a common word yet?
I'll instant message you? Is that what I say?
Yeah.
What was that on, like AOL or something?
I guess that was the first one. But,
oh my God.
But then standing on that counter and acknowledge me now or lose me forever. And Brad goes, you're dating this emo geek? Well, that wasn't your line.
That was your line.
Most shameful. I think that is actually, I think I can safely say that's the most shameful line I've ever delivered.
Really?
What do you mean?
Yeah.
No. You have another opportunity.
Like,
say it right now. Go.
What's that?
Oh, I was giving you an opportunity to deliver it again.
No. I mean, look, the delivery was obviously impeccable. I'm just talking about the line itself. Like, I feel ashamed I think it's partly because that was like at that time in my life and in like my acting career, literally every role that I went out for was either named Brad or Chad or Thad. Really? Like, literally, to be like a blonde, square jawed white guy in the early 2000s, that was, those were the roles that were available to you.
Those were the go-to names.
And if your name is Brad or Thad or Chad, you have to deliver lines like, you know, you're dating this emo geek, which, you know, kind of hurts my soul a little bit.
I'm sure Wade Kinsella had some zingers, right?
Did he?
Yeah, I guess some zingers, man, but not like, he wasn't like a mean-spirited like jock. He was like insecure good old boy.
No, you were like the bad boy in Bluebell, but you weren't.
Yeah, but like, I was a nice persona. I was nice.
Were you?
I'm
not going to tell you where the fuse box is.
I wasn't a dick.
No, you weren't.
I wouldn't say things like, you're dating this emo geek. Like, come on.
You know you wouldn't.
No.
No, Wade was a very lovable character, for sure.
I feel like Zoe was... I'm just, like I said, I'm getting started. But I feel like Zoe was a little bit more zingers, right?
Yeah, she was zingy.
In the beginning. Yeah.
Zingy.
Sure. Wasn't she? Yes.
For
you know,
sure.
I'll have you know, and I know we're talking about Heart of Dixie a bit, but Wilson, Wade wasn't supposed to be the love interest of Zoe's. It was supposed to be George, played by Scott Porter. And mm-hmm. Wilson just came in, swooped right in, and stole that position, so to speak.
Well, I haven't finished, so I don't know what's going to happen.
Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert.
But yes.
Real spoiler alert. Turns out Josh Cook is the end game.
Josh Cook.
Good old Joel.
Oh, Joel. There was a character in, I don't know what season it was, two, three, where they brought in another love interest for me and people were up in arms. They were not a fan of Joel, played by our dear friend Josh Cook.
Oh. Well, and speaking of bringing other people in, bringing Teresa in and Ryan having all of this confusion about her being around and Marissa and trying to be friends. And this last scene at the Mermaid Inn, and Teresa calls Eddie and puts him on hold, I guess. But then Ryan shows up and she says she's got to go. And then it's like, but why do I not want you to go? And then they kiss.
They
and you
do.
Know what?
Yeah.
I wrote that. I made the note that I get it.
Yeah.
I get it. He is totally sexually frustrated because he's had to turn Marissa down so much. And they get, well, I'm sure there's more to it, but I just figured he was frustrated.
Well,
and needed
also,
to get some.
Wilson, I don't know if you know this, but Teresa is his girlfriend from growing up back home.
I think I kind of pieced that together.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
She also had impeccable eyebrows.
She did.
I spent a good amount of time looking at her eyebrows thinking, wow.
Yep.
Those are great eyebrows.
Sign of the time and the place. And also Eddie, played by Eric Balfour, who
also has great eyebrows and like a legendary goatee. That dude's got a good look, man. I got to say, I was like, okay, Eric Balfour. I don't know him personally, but I feel like that's a dude. I feel like that's a dude I like.
That is a dude. Yeah. Definitely a dude. Yeah, he did a good job too.
Yeah.
But yes, Ryan kisses her. But I'm with you. Like, I kind of root for Ryan and Teresa, just like I had said previously, because Marissa was such, you know, with the whole Oliver thing. Wilson, that's a whole other storyline for when you binge the show and watch the whole first season.
Which I can't wait to do, and I will return for a later episode to talk to you guys.
Yep, I'm going to hold you to that. So study up, my friend. Also, you know, this is called the telenovela, and there's a scene where... they're in the kitchen and they say a few things in Spanish, right? Like Sandy does or whatever. And Wilson, you're fluent in Spanish, aren't you?
I would say I'm shy of fluent, but I speak okay.
Yeah, you speak it really well. Anyway.
I speak it well-ish. It depends on who you're asking.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to point out that I learned, Sandy says, adios mio. And I would like to say that I learned that that means, oh my God, when I was in Acapulco when I was like 19 and Friends was on the TV, and because they had it on in Spanish and I knew the show so well, I learned what that meant. Okay, I'm really happy I got to share that with everybody. Anyway, so this episode, it was a good one. There was a lot going on and I'm happy we all got to go over it together.
Right. We forgot to say that this one was written by our beloved Stephanie Savage and directed by Sanford Book Staver, Sandy. And yes, the telenovela was an epic episode.
It was an epic episode. Wilson, we have some quiz questions for you.
Fantastic.
Are
I was
you
hoping.
Ready?
Shoot.
Okay. What is the name of the Ryan character in Seth's version of the telenovela?
Juan Pablo.
No. That is incorrect.
Okay.
Victor?
Ah,
with the
handlebar
mustache?
Yeah, right.
I think Seth actually quotes a real telenovela that was very popular.
He sounded
at the
very
time.
Knowledgeable.
Yeah, I think it's a real one.
Okay.
And there's a real Victor, I think. I don't. Okay, so what game does Anna play at school? That
Ninja
video game.
No. Anna.
Oh, Anna.
At school.
Anna.
When summer comes up in the
Pac-Man?
Yeah.
Ms., but you know.
Nice guess.
Well, it was a guess. It wasn't entirely a guess because actually Ms. Pac-Man is one of my all-time favorite games. So I think it registered on like a level like, oh, we're soulmates. Like,
Ms. Pac-Man, not Pac-Man.
I don't know if they're ever, like, all I remember was Ms. Pac-Man. I don't really remember regular Pac-Man.
Do you remember the bow?
Yeah,
the bow.
The bow.
Yeah.
Yep.
It was her defining characteristic. Made her pretty sexy.
Yeah.
This is getting weird.
If anything was going to make a yellow circle sexy,
okay.
It's that bow.
This is getting weird. Abort. Okay. What room in the inn is Teresa staying in? Yeah. This would be
69.
Well, Julie Cooper is 205.
You heard me.
No, I didn't.
I said 69, Rachel.
Oh.
Get it?
Oh,
see what I did there?
Man, why did I ask? Do you know the number? Because I wouldn't have known. No?
Well, if Julie's in 205 and they're right next to each other.
Am I going to go up?
You're
going to
be a second floor room.
204. 204.
Okay.
Well, this was a great game. You did splendidly.
Wow. That was the whole game? Those were the three questions?
Those were the three questions.
All right. Well, I failed.
Yeah, you did. But don't worry, you get to stay on for some voicemail questions as well.
Hi, Rachel. Hi, Wilson. My question is, what was it like working together on both The OC and Heart of Dixie? And were there any similarities or differences between both sets and cast members that stand out to you both? Thanks so much.
I would say I felt emotionally terrorized on both sets.
That's probably fair. Right out of the gate. But why don't you talk about how great it was?
I feel like you're nudging me in a direction I don't want to go.
Fine.
No, it was. We had an immense amount of fun on Heart of Dixie. Slightly less so on the OC. But that's only because Rachel was too busy doing other things and I was too busy getting fired.
Also fair. I think we covered a bit of this during this episode, especially the story from the pilot of Heart of Dixie.
Similarities is that both of us were there in spirit and in body.
Hi, I'm Catherine, and I'm a huge fan. My question is, what was Rachel and Wilson's funniest memory on set together?
Is there anything else with other than
something to
herpes?
Do with herpes?
Oh, man.
We had a lot.
I think the truth is that we had like kind of a stupid amount of fun doing Heart of Dixie together. I mean, I don't know. I'll speak for myself. I had a lot of fun doing that show. So, yeah, just singling out one was kind of tough. But there was a lot of antics.
Different things. My favorite was when I had to kiss you and you would eat like garlic or tuna right before and have no...
Well, that wasn't like I specifically ate garlic or tuna right before kissing. It was just that I was constantly eating garlic and tuna. That was
He's just constantly eating is the thing. You never stop. But you know, to tack on to that, when I played a joke on Wilson, Cindy and I also played a joke on Scott at the same time. Honestly, I think it was April Fool's and that's why.
It was April Fool's. Yeah.
But we made Scott, like, they said they needed him more tan. So Cindy put like very, very bronzed base on Scott. And he just took it. He was just sitting in the chair, had no clue.
Scott went to his first day of work in blackface. Like, I don't know if this is cool. Like,
this can't be right.
I don't think this is kosher.
But yes, we got Scott as well.
No, that's Cindy.
I know. And me.
Hey, y'all. My name is Tristan, and Rachel, my daughter's name is also Briar. Mm. But my question for y'all is, after playing such impactful, important characters like Summer and Julie, when you went on into your next roles, the next characters you play, how did that affect those characters? Could you see like Summer coming out in whatever roles you were playing next, or Julie? I was just curious how they impacted your career or just your lives in general. But thanks for doing this podcast. Love you guys.
Well, Rachel, Lila Gerstein is the creator of Lila, Heart of Dixie. Lila. It feels like they created a show for you based on what you could do. Is that correct?
I would say no, since it was a doctor. Well, I don't think they thought, you know who can pull this off? Which also speaks to the rap video that Wilson like created and made and wrote that we did making fun of me as a doctor called Call Me Doctor. It's on Funny or Die, right, Wilson?
Yeah, and YouTube and a bunch of other places, I think.
Yeah,
still so one of my great artistic achievements. And one of yours, I think.
You know what? It was actually so much fun. And you and your brother wrote it, right? The rap?
I wrote it. My brother produced the music.
You actually wrote it. It's very clever. So check it out, everybody. But yeah, as far as, I don't know. I'm going to ask you, Wilson, because you're on and you watched this episode of the OC and you worked with me on Heart of Dixie. Did you see similarities?
Yeah, I think that you play characters who are very like self-aware and charming, who have, who kind of lean on humor probably to kind of compensate for maybe other insecurities. I don't know.
I'll take it. Mindy, what about you?
I don't think that, I did get to do Entourage, but it was the fictitious version of Melinda Clark. So that was kind of fun to kind of play that. But then the other roles that I play, like Dominatrix on CSI or something, that's the humor doesn't always, you don't always get the opportunity to play that kind of bigger than life, Julie Cooper humor thing. So I think what it did teach me, though, because long form television in that respect, it taught me to take chances and experiment. And it taught me that whatever I bring to set every day, it's my opportunity to inspire those writers to write for me and hopefully keep me around for more than an episode or more, and hopefully get rehired each season. That's my goal.
Good goal.
Good goal.
Well, thanks for those voicemails, everybody out there. And that was sweet that little girl's name was Briar also.
Yeah.
Wilson, thank you for being a part of our podcast today.
It was a pleasure. It was nice to see you guys.
Yeah.
It's nice to meet you.
Yeah, right. Nice to meet you. I guess you didn't work with them. But if you ever want to come back on.
I hope my Welcome to the OC Bitches podcast mug is in the mail, because if it's not, I'm going to be pissed.
Ooh. Merchandise, Rachel.
Yes. It's on the way. It is on the way.
I would like to say it was a pleasure to have you, but honestly, I thought you did a fantastic job on your very first acting job, for sure. I'm serious.
I really think you're being very generous, but thank you.
No, I actually think that you had the nice arrogance of a water polo player. I went to school with water polo players.
All right. Thank you.
You embodied it nicely.
I'm just glad they didn't put me in a Speedo. I feel I'll take that as a win.
What do you mean? It's your go-to. All right. Well, thanks for coming.
And on that note.
And on that note, bye. Thank you so much for listening. Follow, rate, and review. Welcome to the OC Bitches, wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you like to watch us, check it out on YouTube.
And now on HBO Max. You can watch the episodes there and then our podcast right after. All on HBO Max. Oh, see you next week. No.
No.
Just bye.
Bye.
Hi, everyone. It's Rabia Chaudhry.
And I'm Ellen Marsh.
And we have a new podcast called Rabia and Ellen Solve the Case. As you know, I am a very smart lawyer.
You are. You're so well-respected in the entire world. You know everything.
Thank you so much.
And as you know, I'm a famous Broadway star. Gorgeous. I sing like a nightingale.
Well, yes. At least that's what your mom says. Just kidding. This is Ellen Marsh.
And I'm Rabia.
But we are teaming up to bring you a show like you have never heard before.
True crime meets talk show. Nobody's done it. We're going to do it. We're going to do the impossible. And it's the two things that I love. Ellen, I think you like it too.
What? True crime and talking?
Yeah.
I'm there. Every other week, we will have a guest talking about whatever true crime case they are obsessed with. We have a list, everything from the Lacey Peterson murder.
Yeah, some of the most famous cases you've ever heard of. Obviously, like JonBenet Ramsey, the West Memphis Three.
Chris Watts, Khalif Browder.
Elisa Lam, Madeleine McCain.
Sandra Bland, the Springfield Three. The list goes on and on. But they are all cases that you know, and we are going to dive in deep with someone else and just talk about them.
No. We're going to solve the case, Ellen.
That's right. We're going to solve the case. So subscribe to Rabia and Ellen Solve the Case wherever you get your podcasts.